Engaging. Thorough. Cutting edge with essential information. Unbiased and unfiltered. When it comes to the issues in your community, WZND is here. With detailed investigative pieces from the award-winning WZND News Team, WZND's Bird's Eye View gives you in-depth information on the issues you need to know about. Recognized for excellence in long-form news by the Illinois Broadcasters Association, College Broadcasters Incorporated, and the Society of Professional Journalists, the Bird's Eye View starts now, only on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the October edition of Bird's Eye View. This month we've chosen to take a deep look into issues women have faced for years. We are calling it Women Up. In choosing this month's topic, we thought women's ongoing fight for their rights and equality was something that needs to be talked about more and deserves to be looked into further so we can have a greater understanding of what's at hand, which is why we present this show to you all today. I'm the producer of Bird's Eye View, Jack Pelesny.
And I'm Cameron Kelly.
And I'm Ritz Navarro-Lopez.
How are you two doing today?
I'm doing great, Jack. Just looking forward to sharing what we've been working on for this whole month of October.
Definitely. I'm so ready to unpack everything. It's been a very exciting, you know, month in getting this all together.
Well, we've got a jam-packed show for you all this afternoon. To begin, we'll talk about the Equal Rights Amendment and its significance today. Following that, we'll discuss women in education. Afterwards, we'll delve into women's reproductive rights, including the recent Texas abortion law and how it compares to law here in Illinois. Next will be women's safety, why women are at a greater threat to domestic violence, and what can be done to help. Then we'll talk about women in athletics and the challenges they face, and finish the show by talking intersectionality, including hearing from University President Dr. Terry Goss Kinsey. We have a great show prepared for you all, so stick around. You're listening to 103.3 WZND, Bird's Eye View.
The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View. If you're just tuning in today, our show is called Woman Up, focusing on issues women face. For the past century, women have been fighting for the rights for their rights across the nation, beginning with the fight for the right to vote in 1920.
Yes, women have been working toward earning the same rights as men for decades. This deals with equal pay and dealing with double standards on the job. For an example, women not being able to take a leave of absence because of a pregnancy. Equal Rights Amendment, aka ERA, has been around for quite some time, but it is also not spoken about. I think we hear that we have equal rights, but women are not even a part of the Constitution.
Our own Ashley Daniels spoke with a member of Blono for ERA, Sally Pancrazio, about the history of the amendment and why it is so important.
The history of the Equality Rights Amendment beginning in 1923 by members of the National Women's Party. This was shortly after women had received their rights to vote in June 1916. After the 19th Amendment was ratified by August 1920, it turned out that the issue was about women's equality bringing out the ERA. The amendment failed to be active because there was not a lot of support for it in the 1920s due to social class amongst the division of women. This impacted the woman worker because she did not want her hours or opportunities for a job to be affected in the instance that the Equal Rights Amendment would affect law and endangerment. The amendment is more than votes. It is about women being paid fairly from their counterparts. Statistics show that men make at least 12% more than women and often get promoted more than women as well. The glass ceiling is very much prevalent in society for women. Sally Pancrazio, a resident of Bloomington, had this to say on what the ERA is described as.
Yes, it's a proposal to simply add women into the United States Constitution in recognition that they are equal. Men and women are equal in terms of their rights under the Constitution.
Pancrazio spoke about the history of attempting to pay this legislation, at which it has been on the agenda for several decades, although the wars kept intervening with the process. It was known that the Republican and Senate passed the proposal of the 7-year voting period. Between this time, it had to be passed by 2/3 of the state, with Hawaii passing it within 24 hours and only 35 states passed it. The state of Illinois played a role in this amendment, as Pancrazio said.
Illinois was among those states that had what I would call backgrounds in they were the southern states, and the very far conservative right state did not pass it. However, and the timeline was extended, but there were no additional states that signed on.
Lastly, Pancrazio discussed the importance of women being able to research this knowledge of the amendment being era. The importance is described as a pay equity of women not being able to make as much as a man with the same credentials or background as an example. It is about being considered for equal rights. Pancrazio also talks about how pregnancy affects era for women of now with work and custody amongst the sexes.
Second, there are issues related to pregnancy in terms of accommodation, and women have been fired as a result of being pregnant, and then their employers don't want to have to deal with a perfectly legal health accommodation in the meantime.
Popular arguments for this topic of the Equal Rights Amendment are the ideology of gender-neutral bathrooms and women being drafted for the military. For WNZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Ashley Daniels.
I think that this is interesting that there is not more information about ERA, because this is definitely a huge part of women's rights and the feminism movement. I did not hear much about this topic until we started choosing these topics for this month. When we were looking for people to talk to, I came across the Blono 4 ERA group. There are so many people interested in movements like such locally, and I think that this means something for women in this community and in this society.
Definitely. And I also think it is important for us to know how long we've gone not knowing about this, and it hasn't been passed. I don't think a lot of young women know that we lack these constitutional rights at all, as you mentioned, Cammie. And I actually didn't learn about ERA until last year during one of my political science courses. So it is very interesting to think that we just think we have rights granted in the Constitution, when in fact there's so much more history and struggle behind that.
And Cammie, I'm in the same boat as you. I hadn't heard about it until we began putting this show together. And it's mind-boggling to me that women do not have those basic constitutional rights, and that it is yet to achieve full ratification. Now let's shift our focus to women in education. This is an area in our society where women have seen great growth. WZND's Blake Hornstein tells us about this growth, as well as the work that still needs to be done.
Gender inequality has been an unfortunate aspect of American culture for a very long time. However, that gap has been progressively closing as women have continued to flip the script and change the narrative surrounding them. Specifically in education, women have gone from not being able to receive an education to being the primary educators. In fact, over 75% of teachers in the classroom are women, a number that continues to grow year after year. Courtney Marks, an assistant principal for District 87, believes that this change is a byproduct of the impact women can provide outside of the classroom.
I truly believe education begins in the home, and a lot of time that starts with the mom. So continuing with that tradition in schools and having a lot of teachers are parents, you know, and moms.
What also gives Marks a unique outlook on women within the education realm is that she is African-American. Less than 32% of all superintendents are considered minorities. One of the things she wants to see change in leadership is relatability to their students within school districts.
So we have to make sure that the people that are making decisions for students have a perspective that can be shared with the students that they serve. For minority educational leaders, we know what it's like to be in spaces that are all white. We know what it's like to navigate those.
And while women have made leaps and bounds in the education field, there is still much work to be done. Women have become educators and have taken on positions of leadership, but they must continue to dream big to bridge the gap of gender inequality.
More women to aspire to be leaders. How do we create support systems for women that want to be leaders? And I think in the future we will have more equal representation for not only just teachers, but for leaders as well.
Reporting for WZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Blake Hornstein.
I really loved that point about how education does begin in the home by our parents, you know, like our mothers. I really enjoyed that comment, but I do find it very interesting to see the lack of women and people of color in school administrations after learning that 70% of teachers are women. And I actually did some research myself after this just to get more info on it. And according to a 2020 study published by the AASA, referred to as the School Superintendents Association, at least 2/3 of superintendents are white men.
And I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up, Maritza. It makes me wonder why that's the case, given how prominent women are as educators. Something that crosses my mind, and it's something we'll discuss later in the show, is that confident women in power are often called arrogant or bossy by men, who are often the people hiring school superintendents. As women continue to grow in numbers in education, perhaps we'll see more female superintendents as well.
One thing that stuck out to me in Blake's piece is that less than 32% of minorities are superintendents. I like the fact that Courtney Marks explains that the representation of students needs to be reflected in the people that lead them. I think that students are understood more when a person can understand where they're coming from. I think that this shows that women are in front of the classrooms, but I think that there's still work for women to truly feel included in the workforce. But coming up after the break, we're going to take a look at women's reproductive rights, intersectionality, and domestic violence. Be sure to stick around. You're listening to Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND.
More Bird's Eye View is here now, only on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Welcome back to the Bird's Eye View. If you're just tuning in, this show is called Woman Up. So far, we have discussed Equal Rights Amendment and how women's roles have evolved in education. Now we will dive into a topic that has had some quite buzz: reproductive rights. This has been a conversation that has been talked about for years. So many people have so many opinions, but the main topic has been that women do not have such a say about their bodies because men are usually the ones passing laws and policies about it.
Our own Madison Myers talked with Illinois State University professor Dr. Kyle Ciani about what reproductive rights look like in Illinois and around the country.
Reproductive rights are defined as legal rights and freedoms relating to reproduction and reproductive health. However, reproductive rights and freedoms are defined differently for people across different cultures and communities around the world. With everything happening in the United States today regarding things like the Texas abortion ban, a bill that recently banned abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, a time when most women do not even know that they are pregnant, the issue has increasingly become a huge topic of conversation for those who disagree and for other states that would like to follow in the footsteps of Texas. So, what do reproductive rights look like in the U.S.? And what about Illinois? Dr. Kyle Ciani, a professor at Illinois State University who specializes in the histories of women and gender across the Americas, provided some information on the topic.
I think it's important to understand that reproductive rights means more than, it means something different to each individual, certainly, and to communities of people. So reproductive rights means the ability to have a choice as to the, if you want to become pregnant, how you want to become pregnant, and have access to healthcare procedures that are connected to reproductive faculties.
Dr. Ciani also discussed what legislation Illinois currently has in place to protect women's reproductive rights. In Illinois, Senate Bill 25, the Reproductive Health Act, was signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker on June 12th of 2019. This Reproductive Health Act establishes the fundamental right to reproductive health, which means women have the right to use or refuse contraception and the right to continue a pregnancy and give birth or have an abortion. Dr. Kyle Ciani emphasized the importance of knowing your rights as a woman in each state before you move somewhere because there are many states following along with Texas. Lastly, Dr. Ciani emphasized that it is crucial for women to be aware and protect their reproductive rights because losing them can affect other rights surrounding women and reflect on a woman's economic status and independence.
One of the things that is important for us to connect is that reproductive freedom and rights is always going to be connected to economic status and a woman's independence, her ability to earn wages independently. And part of that independence is having child care, access to affordable child care.
For WZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Madison Myers.
As Madison mentioned, reproductive rights are a huge topic of conversation after the Texas Heartbeat Law banned most abortions in that state. Even here in Illinois, we are seeing some changes in legislation. Just days ago, the state repealed a law requiring that parents or guardians be notified when girls younger than 18 are seeking an abortion.
Something else that I found interesting in Madison's piece is how women need to be aware of the reproductive laws in every state they go to because they differ all across the country. As she noted, there are states falling in line with Texas regarding abortion, and it just makes it that much harder for women to choose and have the right to what they do with their own bodies.
Reproductive rights include more than just rights reproductive-wise. I love how Madison goes into detail with Dr. Ciani about economics and how that impacts reproductive rights. Child care is a factor in reproductive rights that I think that many people do not talk about. There are so many subpoints that determine a woman's choice and decisions. That moves into my topic about women having to make choices that can be really hard when in an abusive relationship. In my piece, I talk about domestic violence and the safety of women as a whole. 1 out of 4 heterosexual women experience domestic violence in Illinois. Let's listen in on what people had to say about domestic violence and its effects. The cycle of domestic violence and safety issues continue due to women not having enough resources and the condition of life they are currently in. Jen Johnson from Freedom House Domestic and Sexual Violence Services says that women stay in certain situations if children are involved. Johnson goes on to explain why women are so fearful to leave certain situations.
The power and control dynamic, not only the generally the size of men being bigger than women, but typically they are the breadwinners of the family, so they bring in more of the income.
Johnson mentions that conversations regarding domestic violence are kept quiet.
I believe it's not spoken about more because it's known as a family secret kept inside the house walls. Someone may portray as a gentleman out in the public and on social media, but that may not be who he necessarily is once they are home.
Becky Hart from Integrity Counseling says that men can say threats like,
I'm going to keep the kids, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill the kids. You know, there might be threats like that, and that's going to make a woman very fearful.
Years ago, Hart said she saw a friend with visible bruises on her body and knew that she was being abused. Hart says that her friend mentioned that her boyfriend would get angry at her. At this point, Hart said that she had to step in and say something.
She kind of left it off again and kind of, you know, tried to downplay it. And I just looked at her and said, you deserve much better. Nobody deserves to be hurt like this. Relationships aren't supposed to hurt like this.
Safety in general has been an issue for women. Ann Taylor from YWCA indicates that women should ask for help if they feel deep down that they are not safe.
Instinct is that ability that our brains have of noticing our surroundings and processing that information quicker than our, you know, our kind of conscious brains can do. And so really following that instinct is a huge part of staying safe.
YWCA, Integrity Counseling, and Freedom House encourage others to speak up and speak out if they hear or see something. For WZND and Bird's Eye View, I'm Cameron Kelly. What was interesting about this topic is that I also learned about LGBTQ plus couples. Lesbian women do not often speak up about their experiences because they can be outed by their significant other. It can be hard for women to speak up. Women may also not have proper resources like their own bank account, or they may not just have the means to get away themselves without support. Also, safety in general is a huge issue that women have been facing for years because of ways that society views them.
Yes, and Jen Johnson talked about the power dynamic, which keeps women from speaking out against their abusive partner. Hearing what she said, you know, men being larger, making more money, and having children being involved is really upsetting. It all puts a vice grip on women being abused, feeling that they can't escape harm.
And as we know, there was a lot of fear on campus early in the semester of men approaching students, and I think it's often easy to dismiss these situations as irrational fear or situations that were exaggerated. However, with that power dynamic that we just mentioned between men and women, as you know, Cameron, it can be very scary seeing a man walking towards you who is clearly bigger than you or even walking near just a group of men. So it's interesting and important to know how and where these fears are rooted in. But the important topics do not stop there, as we have more to come. Stick around after the break as we discuss women in athletics and intersectionality in women's identity. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND.
The Bird's Eye View continues now, only on 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Bird's Eye View on 103.3 WZND. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Woman Up, where we have so far discussed the Equal Rights Amendment, women in education, reproductive rights, and women's safety against domestic violence.
Another area that has always been welcoming is the sports realm. Women are not seen as the greatest of all time or the best of the best, or at least the way that men have been seen in the sports eye. Women continue to push in order to help open doors for women, whether in coaching or the collegiate level. I'm excited to learn what women have to say about being a part of athletics in different sports and different levels.
And in this next piece, Mike Fornelli spoke with a number of women within our ISU's athletic program. And he also had much help from another one of our reporters, Rachel Hickey, to help create these connections and make their voices heard.
Since 1972, women in collegiate sports have had a lot to celebrate. That said, there has been and continues to be a significant amount of misrepresentation, sexism, and an unbalanced lack of attention towards women's athletics in the last 50 years. Starting with the issue of misrepresentation in coaching, recently hired ISU swimming and diving head coach Caitlin Hamilton says some sports have seen a lot more progress than others.
It felt like every program had this token female at a time. It started to change in the last couple of years, but you still look around and as far as sports go, we're one of the worst at having women on deck, especially in head coaching roles.
Data compiled by NCAA Champion Magazine's Lauren Stark shares that at Title IX's founding in 1972, women held head coaching positions in 90% of all women's collegiate athletic programs. Today, they make up for less than half. Hamilton shared her own experience as a former athlete and now coach to illustrate this need for female representation in coaching to return.
Our voice matters. Our presence matters. What we're able to teach these young women from a women's perspective really, truly is impactful.
One of Caitlin's student athletes, sophomore swimmer Miley Simons, saw an even bigger lack of women in coaching at home in Utah in lower levels before she came to Illinois State, with a hopeless future until more women are given a chance to prove themselves.
I feel like people tend to underestimate females with sports, and they don't realize that females can actually be good coaches too. Sometimes people don't give the female athletes the chance.
Although these misrepresentation issues should not be overlooked, it is interesting to hear the perspective of Nora Janka, a sophomore on the Redbird volleyball team. After growing up in Austria and not having much choice of sports to pick from, Janka notices much more opportunity for female athletes in the United States.
We don't even have women's soccer. We only have men's soccer. That's, I'd say, like the biggest difference to hear, where like volleyball is big and track and field is big and like soccer, like women's soccer is really big as well. So I think that's like interesting to see, like, oh, in other countries, like, women's sports actually do matter.
Yet despite these freedoms in the United States, Redbirds volleyball head coach Leah Johnson points out that the treatment of women in athletics, specifically by some media, is completely unfair as opposed to men. This season, Johnson has encouraged her team to read Wolfpack, a book written by U.S. Women's Soccer World Cup champion Abby Wambach.
It's interesting to hear from that perspective that she is comfortable saying, I was the best all time when I played. You don't hear a lot of women say that, because then we are labeled as arrogant, full of ourselves. Where you hear men say that and they're like, look how confident he is. Like, he's the one.
Johnson says the root of all these problems and hypocrisy goes back to the lack of female representation in coaching, especially in positions in men's athletics.
How do you rid the idea of, oh, that's just locker room talk? Well, you put a woman in that locker room. And I guarantee you that locker room talk changes, because when you have to see the person that you're talking about, and not that that's always what locker room talk is, but when you're confronted with that same person every day and they're humanized, you're much more accountable for the things you say, think, feel. Good culture is diverse culture. But when there's never a woman in the room for any of our male sports, are we really giving them the best experience we can? I don't believe so.
For Bird's Eye View and WZND, I'm Mikey Fornelli.
Mikey talking with Nora Janka, the ISU volleyball player from Austria, really provides a lot of insight and perspective that we don't usually get to see. She talked about how she sees a greater importance of women's sports in the U.S., which I don't think diminishes the issues women face in athletics here, but instead also highlights how this is not only a countrywide problem, but a worldwide one.
Agreed, Jack, and I loved how Coach Leah Johnson talked about locker room talk. She says that things will be different if there were women in a room, and she's not wrong. The dynamic and environment changes when there's a woman in any setting. Miley Simmons also explained that women are not even given the chance in the sports world as coaches. I think that women can be underestimated, but can bring the same or more to the table as men. Women have also paved the way for their own to make a difference for other women competing or coaching.
And one comment that stuck out to me from this piece was volleyball head coach Leah Johnson saying that good culture is diverse culture, and the impact women can have if they were on different men's sports. But now, shifting gears a bit, as we know, diversity doesn't just mean the inclusion of women, but also people of color. And one thing women of color are often faced with is their multiple identities, and thus making this next piece all about intersectionality.
Intersectionality is described as someone who's part of a number of marginalized groups, which includes gender, sexuality, race, ability, class, and body size. Associate Director Angel Howard of Professional Development and Staff Recognition, who also holds other positions on the Illinois State University campus, explains that the true definition of intersectionality can be mistaught.
I think when it comes to intersectionality, I have heard it being taught wrong in many places, in classrooms. I've actually been invited to spaces to talk about intersectionality, and their definition was way off. And so I just want people to really take the time to explore and read and really, really get it, because once you get it, then you get it, you know? And so I don't just want us using pretty words just to use them. I want us to actually understand the frameworks behind them and how do we apply it if we really, really, really care.
Associate Director Howard details how the theory of intersectionality is a response to systemic racism.
The theory and the practice and the framework of it is actually the response to systemic racism. Because if we can get people to acknowledge that my experiences are completely different because of me being Black on top of being a woman, if we can get people to recognize that, then we can get people to actually find solutions.
President Dr. Terry Goss Kinsey explains how women have a disproportionate position in the STEM field. Kinsey describes her experience studying biochemistry and other sciences as a woman.
I can speak to from personal experience, but I think it's transferable to other people, is this idea that women are expected to do so much more service than men. So part of it comes from the identification that, well, we want to show gender equity. So we want half of our committee to be women, but half of our faculty, scientists, whatever group we're talking about, are not women. Therefore, women have a disproportional service requirement. And then people will say to you, well, it's really good for you to serve on this committee because it's good for your career. You've got to pick the right opportunities. And so you have to, so they come to you and they say, okay, well, we need, sometimes they even say that, well, we need a woman on this committee, which is kind of offensive.
President Dr. Kinsey expands on the importance of having a community and not feeling alone.
I talk about networking with my graduate students when we would go to conferences, you know, meet people, build yourself a community. And remember, those people don't have to be right where you are. So if you're, I am the only president of the university. I can reach out to other women presidents. And I will tell you that when I got this job, there were a whole bunch of women presidents in Illinois that sent me lovely messages welcoming me, right? And so there's a community that you can reach out to, that you can go to as a safe place for help. So you might be the only student in differential equations that's a woman or a person of color, but you can definitely reach out to students that might be in a different class, right, that are your peers that can help you talk through these things. So the number one thing is don't be alone.
For Bird's Eye View and WZND, I'm Jose Sandoval.
As you heard, Jose had a chance to speak with Illinois State University's first female president, and her point of finding people that are going through the same thing as you is key. Having support as a woman, let alone a woman of color, is extremely important, and knowing you are not alone is key to finding your ground.
Jose spoke with educated women with many different titles. I love President Kinsey explaining that it can be hard working as a woman in certain fields by yourself. She also has many titles in the science department, and she's also a doctor. She holds a title as a doctor that some people may not recognize. Jose mentioned to me that she does like having the title President Dr. Kinsey. She has every right so because she earned that title. I learned that it is important to acknowledge the full potential of women.
Absolutely, and with that, we've reached the end of today's Bird's Eye View. Today we discussed a wide array of topics regarding women's rights and safety, from the Equal Rights Amendment and women's roles in education, to reproductive rights and domestic violence, to women in sports and intersectionality. If you missed any part of today's show, you can head over to WZND.com to listen to the full show right after this. Be sure to tune back in for the next show on December 5th at noon for more in-depth coverage on all the issues that matter in the Bloomington Normal community, right here on the Bird's Eye View. This is 103.3 WZND.
That's it for this month's edition of the Bird's Eye View. To hear this and other past episodes of the show, find the Bird's Eye View podcast on WZND.com or in the iTunes podcast store. And as always, for up-to-the-minute award-winning local news, sports, and weather, stay tuned to 103.3 WZND Fused Radio.